get old. That still sounds absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Simon Bruce.
Back once again with John's ill behaviour. Yeah, there you go. And we're off.
Do you know what? When you the second you said back once again, I almost said with a renegade master. Love it.
Renegade Muppet.
Renegade
master.
Love it. Oh, brilliant. Right. Welcome. Thank you. It is I, Paul Marsh.
And I, John Brown.
Not sure why we're speaking like, you know, 16th century knights, but here we are. I think we're both extremely tired, aren't we?
Thou art full of festive energy. Thine sir. Yes.
Yeah, it's one of them ones. There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah, there
a
is.
Lot going on, and we're both extremely tired. But we're going to get through this. It could be an interesting hour or so.
Speak for yourself, mate. I'm full of beans.
Full of beans. Right, okay.
Full of beans.
Right, we got coming up, we got some news, we're going to have a look at the cinema, and we have got a great interview coming up. I was really, really lucky that I spoke to Paul Rees.
Yes, you did.
Who is in not one, but two of the biggest films at the cinema right now. Mm. Of course, he is in Saltburn and Napoleon.
Yes, he is. He's got a very good agent.
Yeah, and of course he's been gone for so long as well. So it's really nice to have a little look at what's been going on in the streaming world. And of course, we are going to look at our tip top five towards the end of the show, which in honour of the latest Netflix release, Leave the World Behind, featuring Julia Roberts, we are going to do our tip top five disaster movies.
We are?
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay. Looking forward to
this
that.
This is news to you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Excellent. Looking forward to that.
Right, so starting right at the tip-top-top, we're going to go straight into the news. Oh, in fact, we haven't done all the socials and bits and pieces, have we?
We can do that, by all means. If you want to follow us, at Need a Bigger Pod, I'm at John Brown TV. That's at J-O-N Brown TV.
I'm at Paul Swampy Marsh.
By all means, send him the good stuff, send me the abuse. You know how it works.
That's pretty much it.
Because he likes to be told he's brilliant, and I like to laugh at things on the internet. So
And if you want to kind of keep a track of what is going on specifically with the podcast and Scoreheads and everything else.
Ooh,
like that.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot, by the way.
There
is a lot.
There is. There's been quite a bit. I mean, we've got, the James Newton Howard, at the time of recording this, the James Newton Howard episode is currently up, doing well. For all those of you that are going to see Hunger Games a lot, it's doing very well at the box office. We've got some more coming up. There are quite a few. I can tell you absolutely that this week, and probably by the time you hear this, there will be one from Daniel Pemberton. He's on tour at the moment doing live performances of him and an orchestra and a band. Actually, a band. Him and a band and an orchestra doing live concerts where they play his Across the Spider-Verse score to picture on tour.
Oof.
So, yeah, he'll be on to talk about that. That's coming up this week. It should be out by the time you hear this. Technically, it should be. But, yes, and there's a few others as well. We're also, at any point, anytime soon, we've also got the full uncut version of Neil Hannon and Joby Talbot talking about the music of Wonka. So, yeah, there's lots coming up on Scoreheads. And, of course, we're here with you every Wednesday on this very pod, which is mainly middle-aged men moaning about movies. That tagline's stuck, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really had. We really tried to get the name that gets the podcast that gets the names wrong.
Yeah, but
we really tried to get them
right.
And then, so now it's just two middle-aged men moaning about movies.
Well, one middle-aged man moaning about movies and one middle-aged man moaning about a man moaning about movies. Yeah, basically, that's what it is.
Right, so let's have a little look at the news. Charlize Theron and Daniel Craig are going to star in Two for the Money, which is a thriller heist from Justin Lin.
Okay, so the man behind Fast and Furious.
Mm, yes.
Or certainly the apex
some
of Fast,
of, yeah, the,
Fast
some,
and Furious.
Certainly some of the best ones.
The good
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
The best ones, Fast Five, so yeah.
And Justin there was Lin. A little bit of a bidding war behind it, and it has been won by Apple Original Films, which I have to say, I'm not mad about, because Apple seem to do that. I would say they seem to do it right, you know.
Yeah, they go to the cinema first.
They seem to give creative control to the director. It goes to the cinema for a decent amount of time, you know, whether it's 3 weeks or a month
like Killers. Yeah.
And then it obviously comes to Apple TV, which is, you know, just the way it should be done. So, you know, we don't know too much about it other than the fact that it's a heist thriller starring Charlize Theron and Daniel Craig, directed by Justin Lin. All of those things tick boxes, don't they?
Yeah, James Bond and Furiosa in a Fast movie. There you go.
Yes.
I mean, Furiosa's already in the Fast franchise anyway, so that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Daniel Craig in a Fast and Furious is an interesting concept.
Yeah.
You could see him as a good villain. Be interesting if he played a villain, yeah, just to change things up a bit. He was the villain.
I like it.
That would work, I think.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. We have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
But it's fun to...
I think the fact that this was conceived on Fast X, or the start of Fast X, obviously, then I think you kind of see where Justin Lin's headspace was with this kind of thing. So I think that's the kind of thing that you have to look at for that.
Charlize is obviously now a very big part of the franchise in Fast, so it makes sense that they would swap notes.
Awful haircut.
Really? That we're going there?
It's not good, is it?
Two men with terrible hair.
Oh yeah,
are going to be critical of a woman's haircut.
Hey, let's face it. That's pretty much the only thing that I could be critical of Charlize Theron, because she's literally 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10 in everything else she does. But her hair in that one film is not good.
Okay, right. Let's move past throwing on-set hairdressers under the bus. Should we do that? Or the fast-moving car.
Speaking of Daniel Craig, who is obviously no longer James Bond, somebody else who is not going to be involved in the next James Bond is Mr. Christopher Nolan. He has confirmed that he absolutely will not be guiding the next chapter of the James Bond saga.
Didn't he have a meeting, though?
Well, I think it was talked about. I think the subject was broached. How far it went along that line, I don't know.
I don't know.
Do you see this as a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think that a James Bond, sort of, whether it's a mini, you know, like he did with the trilogy with the Batman, would he have done a good trilogy of James Bond? Or
he was up for it, and now he's not. So that tells me.
But so was Tarantino at one point. At one point, Tarantino wanted to do it.
Never would have happened. Like, so, reality. Like, I think it went something along the lines of, he really wanted to do it. By the way, this isn't fact. This is just my thoughts.
This is exactly what
my thoughts about this are. And inside the dark, dark realms of my imagination, and not entirely at all in any reference to anything that really happened. But in my head, it went like this. He really wanted to do it. They really wanted him to do it. They had a meeting and then explained that he'd have probably absolutely zero control whatsoever.
Yeah.
And he went, no, you're good.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I was thinking. I didn't see him being able to have the creative control that he probably wanted. He probably wanted the storyline. You know,
well, he always said that he would come in, he wanted to do it. I know this much, that he said if he wanted to do it, he'd wanted to do it over. So when it was time, and this is why I never did a Daniel Craig one, when it was time for someone else to go and someone new to come in, and it was all fresh again,
right?
Like as what happens when you change Bonds,
yep.
That would be the time for him to do it, because then he'd kind of have some ideas about where it could go. So obviously that opportunity arose, conversation happened, and now all of a sudden he's not doing it. So I think either that or he was really up for it. However, something has happened to catch his eye. Or his heart,
maybe,
or his attention.
Maybe, an original story, yeah.
That
maybe.
He's gone, actually, do you know what? I haven't got time for this now. So, I don't know. But I know he went from being really up for it to now not doing it. So,
how do you feel about this whole James Bond saga? Do you feel that it's gone on a long time? And, you know, we've got no news about who the next Bond is, no next director. Do you think, obviously, with the Bond franchise now moving over to Amazon, isn't it?
No. So,
do you think there's added pressure?
No. I don't quite know the exact facts.
Bond is bigger than it ever has been.
Yeah, so Amazon bought MGM.
And with that came Bond?
No.
No?
No. So, Eon and Danjak Productions, who own Bond, the Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson and so on, the family, they have the larger share of control in the franchise, so they will always own the lion's share of the rights. So Amazon essentially takes over a percentage, but not the whole deal. So they still have creative control, the Eon, over what happens next. Amazon, obviously, as like, for want of a better description, a part owner or a board member or someone that has a percentage of control, can obviously sit around a table going, any news?
Right,
what
okay.
we're doing,
right.
But they don't have ultimate control. Ultimate control will gotcha. Always be in Barbara Broccoli's hands.
Gotcha.
So she still gets to decide how and when and where.
Jeez.
Yeah, because I remember I first got here when Spectre came out. That was when I was first here. And that was 2015.
Wow.
And then obviously No Time to Die was, 2021. Yeah, so yeah, 6 years. So there's as long a gap between Spectre and No Time to Die as there was. Obviously got some sort of deal in place there. I don't know if that deal continues with the next movie. I heard a rumor somewhere that she was going to pass it back to Warner Brothers but again, it's rights management depending on the level of the film,
saying, look, you know, in this day and age with people with long lenses, while we're trying to film, taking pictures of things that could spoil storylines and bits and pieces like that. So we kind of put a bit of a plea out that, you know, look, people don't want to have these things spoiled.
PVOD, then, don't we? Then we get streaming and so on. That will all be within Amazon's control. You know, the digital downloads, the streaming side, the digital side of it. The disc side of it will be someone else altogether. So she's got deals going on with different people, right?
Gotcha.
So Amazon will have the rights so far as, like, anything to do with the home, Amazon will probably have control over. So, for example, they periodically pop up on Amazon as a collection.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think Amazon's the only place you can watch them in 4K. For example.
Right.
Some of them are out on 4K discs, some of them aren't. So that's like one of their exclusives, is that you can watch the whole set in like 4K or something. But yeah, so then when it comes to disc, it's a completely different ball game. Because obviously Universal had the rights to the cinema for No Time to Die, so they released the DVD, right? But it can change. Like at one point, I think Sony were putting out Bond films, but Fox were putting out the DVDs. Like, it's very confusing. So it's different rights managements in different places. But in terms of where this goes next, that's entirely up to her. She won't do it until she's ready. She certainly won't bow to any pressure. When she feels the story's right and who she's got her eye on is right for the part, and the story's right and the writers are right and everything's in its right place, then she'll do it. She won't do it just because, oh, we need to get another one out because we need to make money. She'll do it when she's ready.
But do you agree with me that I think Bond is literally the most successful it's ever been right now, even under Connery and Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan? I think it's the biggest it's ever been.
I mean, No Time to Die was huge.
Yes, massive.
Like, absolutely huge.
Massive.
Kind of, I remember being Timothy Dalton's films were being pretty huge. I remember the hoo-ha over License to Kill because it was a 15. And then it kind of lost a massive part of its audience, for example. But I think Goldeneye and Tomorrow Never Dies, I kind of feel like, had the biggest campaigns. I kind of feel like Goldeneye and Tomorrow Never Dies, there was like massive Bond mania because it was back after a really long break.
So, yeah, that's the other thing, isn't it? Is when it goes away for a while. Obviously, all of Daniel Craig's movies kind of came in a reasonably quick succession, you know, all within sort of like three years of each other.
Well, not even that. I mean, there was a break. There was the Casino Royale, obviously, was after, I'm trying to think, there was about 4 years between Die Another Day and Casino Royale. So that's quite a long break. But and then between Casino Royale, I think Casino, Quantum and Skyfall, maybe, were pretty swift. No. Casino and Quantum were pretty swift. Then it was kind of like a little break, and then you had Skyfall and Spectre.
Yeah. Was he renegotiating the contract and stuff?
And then there was six 6 years between Spectre and, I think.
Was there really No Time 6 years?
Yeah, because I remember I first got here when Spectre came out. That was when I was first here, and that was 2015.
Wow.
And then obviously No Time to Die was, 2021. Yeah, 6 years. So there's as long a gap between Spectre and No Time to Die as there was between License to Kill and Goldeneye.
I think maybe that's the point. Maybe it's the point that because No Time to Die in 2021 was so huge and ended the way it ended, there's a big, huge now outcry as what's next? What's coming next?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be anything made this side of Christmas. So you're looking at 2024, and if they started in 2024, it won't be out till 2026.
So
that's another 5 years.
5 years, yeah.
So they're getting longer. The gaps between them are getting longer. I don't know, though. I kind of feel like I would rather wait long gaps for good stories rather than bang one out every... I mean, when Bond first started, they were banging one out a year.
Right, let's move on to, let's have a little look at what's out in the cinemas this week. So out in the cinemas this week, we have got The Three Musketeers, M'lady.
That's the sequel to the one that came out a couple of years ago.
The Three Musketeers.
Evidently. Yeah, this is the one with Eva Green, right?
Yes.
That one,
yes,
yeah.
Rebel Moon Part 1. Is this a series?
So,
is this
this is Zack Snyder's new one.
But is it a series?
I think it's a trilogy of films. I don't think it's a series.
So it is an actual proper film?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm very confused about this. If anyone wants to, at Need a
Bigger Pod. Because it is a Netflix production,
yeah.
But it is coming to cinemas on limited release.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm very confused
yes,
by this.
Because
the only reason because I thought it was a Netflix thing.
I thought it was a series.
But then I saw couple of people we know in our circles, colleagues for want of a better description, went to an IMAX thing for it because it was shot in IMAX.
Right.
So
okay.
If it's shot in IMAX, then surely it's going to get an IMAX release. Yeah. So I don't know. Is it a movie? Is it a series? Let us know. At Need a Bigger Pod. I need to know more about this. Netflix, come at me. Tell me more. Is Zack Snyder? All that, I do know this though. Is Zack Snyder's new project?
Then you got to sit up and pay attention.
I do know this. And that's due, what's that, dropping this week?
This week, yep.
Interesting.
Alongside Everybody, Monica, Band 4, What Happens Later, The Shift, The Lost Boys, and finally, Godzilla Minus One.
You're so excited.
I am really, really excited for this.
It's just had pure hype and love and joy from around the world. We've got a lot of friends in the States. They've seen it already. I've got one or two friends and connections over there that have been to see this at least two or three times. And one of those friends in particular is known for only, like us, having time to see one thing at a time and then moving on to the next thing. He went back and watched it three times. That gives you all the information you could possibly need about that.
So it's just one of those things. Every time I find out something else about this movie, it piques my interest even more. When I first saw the trailer to it, I had no idea that it was entirely Japanese made and everything else like that. And it is.
Yeah.
There is going to be a subtitled and a dubbed version released into cinemas.
Yes, because that was a question we had a couple of pods ago, wasn't it? It was like, are we going to get it subbed and dubbed or both? We are getting it.
Yeah, we are getting both.
There
will be different times in the cinemas, so you'll be able to choose which one you see.
Yeah.
But the one that's out right now, again, I similar to you, I'm hearing on the grapevine that it is absolutely phenomenal. But the one thing that amazes me is that supposedly it was made for $15 million.
I know, right?
Which, you know, you can't make a music video for $15 million these days.
I know.
And it looks out of this world.
It does look out of this world. I'm really excited for it. Hopefully. So we'll come back around to it next week.
Next week,
Yeah. Let's have a deep dive on it, because I kind of feel like we're going to be totally in love with it and want to talk about it for about an hour. So we'll do that next week. But it is coming to cinemas in the UK, finally. Obviously, if you're listening over the pond, then you guys have got this already and you know how good it is. But it is coming here to the UK this weekend. So Friday, whenever you're listening to this, it's going to be
15th.
Yeah, Friday the 15th of December in UK cinemas. So check it out. It has gone to cinemas, which is great. I'm very happy.
Again, I was just about to say
very
that,
happy
which is
about
great,
that.
Yeah.
It is going to cinemas. Not to be confused with Monarch, which is on Apple TV at the moment. The series with Kurt Russell, which is part of the Monsterverse, which
or
is the other one.
Godzilla versus Kong.
Or Godzilla versus, or Godzilla X-Kong.
X-Kong, yeah.
Or Godzilla King of the Monsters. That's the Warner Brothers universe.
Completely different.
But this is something entirely organic in terms of it's a Godzilla story from Japan. And I'm very, very excited for it. Very excited.
Talking of things that we were incredibly excited for and waxed lyrical about, of course, the world has now seen Wonka.
I know. It feels like forever ago that
I
we
know,
saw
it. Really,
it
really does. But what I have absolutely loved seeing, just literally 99% really positive, lovely reviews.
Yeah.
I mean, we have been talking about this for so long. I've actually had people coming up to me or messaging me and things like that and saying, thank you for recommending this, because we went to see it and it was amazing.
I've got just the thing for you, the entrepreneurial package. Now, the room is one sovereign a night, but you don't have to pay till six tomorrow. Does that give you enough time to earn a few pennies?
More than enough, Mrs. Scrubby. Thank you.
Oh, it's the least I can do for a stranger in need. Now, sign here and we're all done.
Alrighty.
Thank you, Noodle. That'll do.
Oh, what'd you say?
Who's that in?
The girl.
What girl?
That girl. It sounded like read the small print, and there does seem to be a lot of it. Oh. 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 Just keeps on coming.
Yeah, you don't want to listen to Noodle, Mr. Wong, because she's damaged. She was dropped down the laundry chute as a bab, and I took her in out the goodness of my heart, and I've done my best, Mr. Wong, honest I have, but she's been left with a suspicious nature. She sees conspiracy everywhere.
Poor girl.
I know. These are just your standard T's and C's, but you're welcome to take a look if you want.
I'll just give it once over. Well, that all seems to be in order.
Billy?
Uh-huh.
Hello.
Ah, then welcome to Scrubbits.
Yeah, I had a few people, actually. I'm trying to... Actually, do you know what? I'll level with you. I think it's the first time... I'm just trying to think. There was, what, 1, 2, 3, 4... 1, 2, 3, 6, 7... Maybe 8... Maybe 9 people that came and said... I booked tickets on the strength of the review. And I think that's the first time that's ever happened. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a time before that. When I mean, the odd person, of course, always comes up to you and says, oh, thanks for that. Like, I went and bought tickets and it did not disappoint. But to have like 8, 9 or 10, maybe even 10 people, like that doesn't sound like a lot, right?
Well, no, but like I say, I've had people messaging me over the weekend.
That never happens.
I went out for a meal with friends on Saturday night, and I had 3 of those friends all turn around to me and say... that either they had booked it and seen it and it was fantastic, or they have booked tickets and were going to see it the next day, sort of thing.
Yeah, so, I've never had that before. Don't get me wrong. I've got the odd person coming out and going, oh, yeah, like I went and saw X or Y because like you guys were raving about it or whatever. But I've had that in the past, but never before have I had this many people say to me, on the strength of that review, we've gone and bought tickets and we weren't disappointed. Because there's always the other way that goes, what was that about? I spent money on that.
Yes, well, of course, yeah, that happens. I've had that with my wife many times where I go, I haven't seen this film, it's supposed to be very good, do you want to sit and watch it? And she'll go, oh, yeah, all right then, and we sit and watch it, and she goes, what was that? I don't know, I hadn't seen it, it was just supposed to be good. The other great thing, of course, about Wonka is, obviously, it's not out in America, or it's literally just about to come out in America, but it has absolutely smashed its target, or its proposed take at the cinema, which I believe was due to be around 30 million.
Yeah, before it went international.
And it's somewhere around 45 to 50 million now.
That's before it breaks worldwide. Yeah, because we had it first, right?
Yes.
For a week, I think.
Yes.
And then it goes everywhere else.
So before it goes international, it's absolutely smashed all proposed figures out of the park.
It's going to... I mean, Warner Brothers have had a good year, let's be honest. What with Barbie as well.
Yeah, no, not bad, right?
Like, they've done really well, I think. In fact, I'd say they were... I don't know, because I haven't got any figures in front of me at all, but I would say they have definitely been the top earners this year.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah.
Barbie... Between this and Barbie, I think this is going to really go for it. But yeah, so Barbie as well, of course, let's not forget that was like the highest grossing film of the year or something ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so.
Warner Brothers, you can give yourselves a little pat on the back this year.
I think so.
Done rather
I
well
mean,
for yourselves.
You could... And they did that. And then, of course, you know, we've had a turnaround on the Coyote versus Acme thing. Now that's now coming out because there was a lot of uproar over that not coming out. That's now coming out. So there was an about turn there. So they've done really well. We've not forgiven you for Batgirl yet, but there's a gap in the schedule coming up, guys.
Why not?
There's a gap in the schedule coming up.
Make it happen.
Because obviously there were strikes and things. Dropping that Batgirl film might help you out a little bit. Just saying, in the gap. Anyway, yes, no.
Use it.
Congratulations to
your advantage.
Warner Brothers for a really great, solid year of box office success.
Right, so we got a really great interview coming up with Mr. Paul Rees, who is a fantastic actor. A really, really lovely person, but he's a fantastic actor. And he's in 2 of the biggest films in the cinema right now, or certainly in the last month or so. He's in both Saltburn and Napoleon.
You know,
you'll hear when I speak to him very shortly that, you know, to have... To not be in anything in the cinema for possibly, I'm not sure how long it's been, 10, 15 years, maybe something like that. And then to have 2 within the same month is, you know,
that's
some
crazy. It's insane. But I don't know, different films, but the same. Two very different films.
Amazing directors, by the way.
Two amazing directors. Yeah, Emerald Fennell, and then, of course, Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, having, you know, working for two very, very good thoroughbred directors, like, she's amazing. She's doing so much great work. I'm a huge, huge fan of hers. And so, yeah, they're two very different. I don't know. I'm trying to think. There are certain elements, traits that those films share. Naughtiness might be one of them. Certainly.
Yeah, but also, yeah.
There's a lot of there's a lot of rudies, isn't there? Yeah. On both counts. But also, I suppose ego is prominent, I guess, in maybe both those things. Saltburn and Napoleon. Yeah, two good movies,
elite,
man.
Like, very elite.
Saltburn.
Both, really.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah, both.
Yeah.
Both about the elite.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, like, well, Barry Keoghan as well. Like, what a dude. Yeah, for sure. But Paul's in both of them.
Mm.
I'll have his agent's number now, please. Well, that's the sort of management I could get on side with. Getting two movies for two directors like that.
It's one of them things, isn't it, when, you know, you're sitting there going, oh, what's the next step and what do I do? And I've had this offer and I've had that offer. And then all of a sudden an offer comes in from Ridley Scott and you go, yes, I think I'll do that one. And then you go, right, okay, well, that was rather good. I enjoyed doing that. And then you go, right, what should we do next? Oh, look, here's a script from Emerald Fennell. Yes, please. I think I'll do that one as well, please.
Yeah,
yes.
Yes, sure. Totally. I was just thinking about the music. Of course, my brain is always thinking about the music side of things as well. Two really solid British composers as well, both those movies. Martin Phipps on Napoleon, who also scores The Crown. And Anthony Willis as well, who scored Saltburn. But two solid, brilliant British composers there as well, tied to both those projects. Sorry, that's my scorehead's brain switching back on. Yeah, like, I two solid films. You know, they're away from the norm. I know Napoleon's becoming a bit of a box office monster, but they're two films that are away from, you know, franchise films and blockbusters and that kind of... there's something a little bit darker, a little bit deeper that you can get from both those films, I think. And so, yeah, for Paul Rees to be in both of those...
Do you know what I would say?
He's having a good Christmas.
I would say that both films are non-safe cinema. There are certain films that you can make and you know that they are
like
safe
that.
Cinema.
Non-safe
both
cinema.
Both films had the real potential to tank. Both films had the real potential to be unliked by everybody.
Yeah,
and it's
I don't
that,
know,
it's that you're dicing with the...
But a Marvel project can be that now.
I disagree. I disagree. I think
it can be, though.
I think you're going to get some people that will like a certain film no matter what, even if it gets, you know, 101 out of 5 reviews.
Like, I can like, you know, the Marvels, I liked it, but as much as you loved it, for example, I can throw a stone and find 10 people that felt the complete opposite way about it.
No, I agree.
But I mean, that's a whole other, like, that's a whole other podcast.
But yeah, I just
toxic
think that both
fandom, you know?
Yeah, but, I just think that both Saltburn and Napoleon...
They were gambles.
They're not safe.
They were gambles.
Yeah, very much so.
But I think she makes really great stories and she directs really great films. And I think they work on a level where it's great if they turn out to be blockbusters. That's absolutely phenomenal. But generally, there's just really good filmmaking.
Mm.
And it's not really following anyone's line. Do you know what I mean? Right. It's not following the blockbuster. It's not towing the blockbuster line.
No.
She's not trying to tow the franchise line or this line or that line. She's telling stories and she's passionate about her art. And I think that's... When you keep that focus, you're always going to be making your best work as opposed to being negotiated with by a studio.
Yeah.
And then
kind
of you get these horror stories, like with David Ayer, for example, in The Suicide Squad, where, you know, that movie is very different from the movie he wanted to make.
Yeah.
Or with Chronicle, I think Josh Trank was the other one. No, Chronicle was great. It was the Fantastic Four, wasn't it? There was a completely different version of that. And then the version we got, which was, wasn't too good. Fan-four-stick. But I feel sorry for the director because it's the director that gets piled on.
Yes, it is always.
And it's actually not the director's fault.
Generally,
we had this with Spider-Man 3 and Sam Raimi.
Yep.
Yeah, and you can tell that because Spider-Man 3 is a very different film from Spider-Man 1 and 2. You can tell, you know what I mean? So to be able to be in that space where you're still writing or directing or making films that you believe in the story, you're passionate and you've got a great cast around you and a great team around you and you're all kind of working on one level to just make your best art and not you haven't really got sort of kind of suits around you every 5 minutes going, oh, change that, change that. Oh, we need to, you know, Barry Keoghan needs to be the Joker in this because that's how, you know, or whatever. Yeah, that's how they see him in the Batman at the moment. Yes, so make it more Jokery. And it's like, no, this film isn't about that. This film is about something altogether differently. So, yeah, to be able to have, like I said, a film like Saltburn, which is her making some of her best work, and Ridley Scott doesn't care. You know, Ridley Scott's just like, yeah, I'm making this version of Napoleon. You can like it or not like it. I can give it.
Right, well, on that note, maybe it's time we hear from Paul Rees. Before we go into the interview, I just want to mention I had a slight issue with my mic and it doesn't sound pristine. Luckily enough, Paul Rees's does, which is the main thing because you want to hear from him and not me. So this is what happened when I caught up with Paul Rees.
This place, you know, it's not for you.
Lots of people get lost in Saltburn.
Oh, that's just giving me goosebumps. Look, Pamela.
Oh, no.
I think you're a moth. Quiet, harmless,
drawn to shiny things.
What have you done? I just thought that maybe I could help.
You're not leaving us. You're not leaving Saltburn.
First of all, I want to say congratulations on not having just not one, but two amazing films in the cinema right now. Yes. I'm really interested to know which came first in the shooting schedule-wise and how did that affect your mentality going into the other film?
Well, they weren't that close together, actually. They were fairly close together, but COVID got in the way of the schedule with Napoleon. So we started that a long time before, and that was the first film, and it was a very long shoot, and there were COVID lockdown gaps. So it was everything was through a mask. It was a very different experience. I'm not sure, they're so different. Ridley said to me at the premiere, oh, Paul, you've lost weight. I said, no, I put on 2.5 stone for your film. I've lost weight, exactly. I gained weight. Now it's back to normal. And it was just very different, you know. But in a sense, the experience is always the same in that you enter the world and the skin of another person and of another environment and of another era. 2006, Saltburn and the 18th century for Napoleon. But they're still people in the end with all their vulnerabilities and flaws and joys and restrictions. I was thinking about this earlier, that they were both huge. They are both huge films, big productions. But Saltburn focuses itself into a very small, tight, yes, intimate group. And Napoleon takes its largeness and puts it right out. It expands, so you have 1,000 horses in. You have battle scenes on ice that are just remarkable. But they're both huge films with a different point of focus.
Now, I know this is possibly one of the most stupid questions I've ever asked in my life, but was it about Emerald Fennell and Saltburn that actually attracted you to the project?
Well, I was on a plane, actually, and I saw Promising Young Woman.
Yeah.
And I just came off the plane thinking, how on earth do I ever get to meet this woman? And then I found out about her and realized it was her first film, which made me even keener because it's just remarkable. Oh,
amazing.
I was amazed she wasn't American. I had a whole narrative. She'd been around for decades. Anyway, I found out and then and then literally a week later, this offer came through. And I didn't even look at the script. I said,
"Oh, just amazing! Absolutely. I mean, like I say, she's so talented and so amazing, and everything else. So, for that script to land in your lap must have just been a joy."
No, it was. It was. I would have done anything. Actually, I'd have been a guest in a party just to be in her film. I think she's got such a unique voice. She's a visionary. They're very, very few and far between. And Ridley, in his way, is a visionary too, of a different sort. So I've been very, very lucky this year. And I mean, yeah, Saltburn was just, I'd have done anything to be part of it. I think we all felt the same, all of us, every single person. Sometimes in the night scenes, there were 200 party guests at in the party scene, the outdoor scene. And all of them had come up from London, they come from Manchester, they come from Liverpool, far away just to be part. And they were actors, they weren't the normal. And everybody felt they were doing something special. And how that communicates, I'm not sure, it's mysterious. But it was a generally held feeling.
I can imagine it was, yeah, absolutely. Now, you took a long break from films to return to the theatre. What was it about these amazing projects that drew you back in from the wilderness?
Well, I was asked to do other films a lot. I started very big in film in my 20s. I did Robert Altman and Attenborough and all these. And with a very American focus. And then, you know, I always wanted to get back to the theatre. I always knew I had to do Hamlet. I had to do... I don't know what it was, really. And nothing appeared in film that was as interesting as what I was being asked to do on stage. Nothing compared to it. It would be some dull part in a dull film. And why would you bother? The money, I suppose. And I did a lot of big television. I did a lot of Discovery of Witches and the things like this. These are huge television things. But in terms of the films, and there is less film. There is less great film. That's why, you know, when a voice like Emerald's comes along, you really want to be part of it. And Ridley also, there's much more emphasis now on television. So the great great availability of good film is less, which makes Saltburn stick out all the more, I think. But I'm very glad to be back. And it's a medium, the detail of the medium suits me very much. It's how it started.
Well, we are very much glad that you are back in our lives and doing you know what you do best, and the fact that we all get to see it on cinema. I read that you actually stayed in the butler's quarters whilst you were filming Saltburn. Is method acting something that you've always done?
Well, somebody said to me the other day, the trouble with you is you've never realised how method you are. And I do remember even at RADA going to quite extreme lengths to do it. It didn't feel like method. For me, it was just some way of stopping my terrible fear and anxiety, just to be so connected to the character and the truth of the inner life of the character that you had no space to worry about yourself because you were absent. You'd replaced yourself with somebody else. So yeah, I did stay in the butler's quarters. They were very glamorous, I have to say. This butler is really well. But yes, and people thought I was nuts, but the producer said, oh, yeah, go on then if you insist. I was amazed. Normally they say, no, Paul, you know, health and safety or the insurance doesn't cover that. But there was none of that with this lot. So I was very pleased about that. And I stayed there and I do think it communicates because I know half the actors and I couldn't be that familiar and I had to be separate. So I'd come down alone from the room. I got dressed alone and I went on set as Duncan. And I think that's right. I think it's helpful. In that role, I'm not sure every role requires anything like that, but he needs to be outside. He's an outsider. He's a sort of liminal creature. You know, he's between worlds. You have to work hard to do that. I'm too familiar and friendly, so I knew I had to pull back.
Well, I think it definitely comes across. Now, one last question very quickly, if that's okay.
Yeah.
How have the film sets changed from when you were younger to now? And, you know, do you feel that you're able to guide some of these younger actors?
Well, I'm being guided by them, the actors in Saltburn, all of them. The four young ones in particular just really made me understand. I love working with young actors, the freshness, the new approach. I don't want to be stuck in the past. They teach me so much. I'm so grateful to them. Apart from being four of the most beautiful, lovely human beings I've ever known, they were just so good in different ways and so fresh. They really keep you on your toes. You know, you can't do any of the old stuff with this around. You've got to keep... It's an interesting thing. How do you modernize? How do you get older is the question, isn't it? What do you do? Do you just... get self-satisfied? Well, that's the end of artistry. Self-satisfaction is repulsive. So I just go into everything not knowing anything. And they teach me so much. And they're so dedicated. It's really impressive. So I don't think I was teaching them anything apart from, you know, discipline. I think they were teaching me a lot. And I'm really grateful to them. It's a great experience from that perspective.
Paul, thank you so much for talking to me. I really do appreciate it. And congratulations on both films that are truly wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that, Paul.
Paul Rees there talking about Saltburn, which, of course, is out on Amazon Prime on the 22nd of December.
There you go. You can still see it in cinemas now.
Yes.
It is still playing in cinemas, but if you would like to watch it at home, don't know why, because it plays better on a big screen. But if you do want to watch it at home, yeah, Amazon Prime Video from the 22nd of December. We're moving into that Christmas offering period now.
Yes, very much so. You'll find over the next week or so there will be a lot of things dropping on streaming. Some good, some not so good.
Yeah, Transformers Rise of the Beast is coming to Paramount Plus.
Okay, right, let's move on. Right, so one film that we talked about a lot last week that we thought was dropping to Netflix last week, and it didn't, was Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget.
Cinemas.
Yeah, it kind of got a real limited cinnamon bun release last week. And it is actually dropping to Netflix this Friday.
A simpleton run.
So apologies if we got you all excited to watch it on Netflix and you couldn't, but what you could have done is gone and find it at a local cinema where it would have been showing.
A Sonic Sun.
You can't just make up words.
Current Bun.
There you go, that's better. That's on Netflix.
Netflix this week.
Is actually killing it. I want to talk about Leo. It came out, I think, a week ago, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe 10 days ago, something like that. It's on Netflix. I think it went a little bit under the radar, I'll be completely honest with you. It's an animated movie, and it features the voices of Adam Sandler and Bill Burr. I absolutely loved it.
Of course you did. It's your two favourite people.
But it's just so sweet. And again, so I watched this with my kids, and they loved it as well. So I'll give you a very, very brief, because it doesn't need a whole lot of explaining, but this means it will be really long. Look at you. Anyway,
Kettle, have you met my pot? Come meet my pot, Kettle. Come.
So it's about a couple of class pets, because you know in America they have class pets, don't they? It's not something we really do over here, but
animals in the classroom.
Yeah, yeah.
God, no, that'd be messy.
Yeah. So they have a lizard and a turtle.
I thought you meant like dogs and cats and stuff.
No. A lizard and a turtle. Like
right.
One of those tank things. Right. On the side that they feed.
Can you imagine that? It'd be strange, wouldn't it? Children are.
Exactly. And again, so it used to be a thing that the children used to take them home for the weekend.
Dogs weighing up the wall.
Fido, sit. But they, again, because this shows you that times have changed and they don't really do that. They don't really take them home anymore.
He's wet again. The child or the dog? Sorry, go on.
So basically they get a bit of an old school teacher come in and they start to take these pets home. And of course, Leo, who's played by Adam Sandler, can talk.
Of course he can.
And then slowly, one by one, as each child takes them home, they realize that he can talk. Even after 74 years of him not being found out that he can talk, they all find out one by one that he can talk, and he gives them great advice because he's got 74 years on this earth.
So
he's seen all of these children grow up, and he can now give great advice to these children.
So this is about a 74-year-old talking turtle.
Lizard. Yeah, there is a lizard and a turtle. The lizard is played by Adam Sandler. The turtle, who is called, let me get this right because this is ridiculous, Squirtle.
Isn't that a Pokemon thing?
I've no idea. The Squirtle is played by Bill Burr.
It's a Pokemon thing, I'm sure of it.
Is it?
So he's a talking lizard and a talking turtle.
Yeah.
And the lizard is a 74-year-old talking lizard.
Yes. So he kind of feels he's coming to the end of his life, and he feels that, you know, by going home with each of these children, he can make or break for it and get out and see the world before he dies. But of course, what actually happens is he ends up talking to these children and helping them through their, you know, crisis that they have and what's going on in their lives as they grow up as children.
These mushrooms are good, aren't they?
Listen, it's a perfect children's film because, and I say this a lot, it is 95% for the children, and you just get that 5% in there for the adults, a few jokes in there that only the mums and dads will get.
Yeah.
But it's just a really enjoyable, silly movie is what it is.
Good.
You've got Bill Burr being Bill Burr. You've got Adam Sandler being Adam Sandler. There's a few other voices in there that you'll recognise. Half of Adam Sandler's family is in it.
Yeah.
All of his friends are in it, like he's in all of his different films.
Jason, like Rob Schneider and stuff.
Yeah, Rob Schneider's in there. Jason Alexander, who of course is in... Seinfeld and many, many other things.
Yeah.
He's in there as well. But yeah, so lots of great voices that you will recognise. But it's just a really fun, enjoyable animated movie that if you have Netflix, I know that you're in the middle of watching all your different family Christmas movies at the moment, but at some point over this Christmas period, find a couple of hours to sit down and watch this, and I promise you, you'll really, really enjoy it.
Out of five?
Now, I was thinking about this, and a 4 out of 5 maybe feels a bit too much, but it's definitely better than a 3 out of 5, if that makes sense.
I was guessing a 3.
Yeah, it's better than a 3, but it's not quite a 4. So 3.5 out of 5 would be perfect for it.
Yeah, there you go. That's fair. I like that's fair. I was just thinking, you got me thinking about alternative Christmas movies. Because I've been going through my list, right? I haven't watched anything directly festive. So I've been watching things that either feature Christmas in them but aren't about Christmas or are set at Christmas. So, like we talked about, things like Iron Man 3, things like Batman Returns, things like that. I've been going through that list. Lethal Weapon. Although Candy Cane Lane did inspire me to go to Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Right.
Well, there's two things. So Candy Cane Lane inspired me to go back to Beverly Hills Cop 2, but also our conversation in the car inspired me to go back to Beverly Hills Cop 2.
What was that? I can't remember.
Well, we were trying to remember what the made-up name of the kids were.
Oh,
the scene where he's
right.
trying to drop
yeah,
off
yeah,
the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's blagging his way into the gun club, and then he's dropping off what is essentially Judge Reinhold's vitamins, Billy Rosewood's vitamins.
Yeah.
But he wraps them up in the bag and pretends it's a delivery from a explosive research company and does this whole skit where he's like pretending to not want to set them off and stuff. And the girl on the desk, they're having that back and forth. And he blags money out of her and basically says he's got two kids, Monique
and
Uni.
Monique
and Uni.
Monique
what did I
Uni.
Say they were?
I can't
and you said it was
now.
Something else. I said, oh, no, it's... I can't remember what the other name. I said two random names, and you were like, "No, that's something else." And then you suddenly remembered something random from.
To be fair, most of our conversations, I was going to say away from these mics, but to be fair, even on these mics, are just completely random and make
no they
sense.
Were. And that's why I was like, "Oh, Eddie Murphy."
Yeah.
And then I saw Candy Cane Lane, and I was like, "Oh, that was nice." And then I was like, "Oh, I really feel like watching Beverly Hills Cop now."
But much the same as I'm sure Chicken Run: Dawn of the Nugget will be a film, an animated film that you sit down and watch over Christmas. Leo is exactly the same.
Yeah, like Robin Hood. Prince of Thieves, like, you know, literally James Bond. We're just talking about James Bond.
Those
things you associate
family films that you sit down and watch at Christmas.
I associate Jurassic Park with Christmas as well because
it was always on when we were growing up.
Yeah. Indiana Jones, that's the other one. And things like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And I think Wonka will be in that category, I think.
Oh, 100%. 100,000,000% it will be a Christmas movie for years to come.
Yeah.
Right, let's talk about Netflix's big release this week.
I'm
which
interested.
Is Leave the World Behind, directed by Sam Esmail and starring Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali, and Ethan Hawke.
Mahershala.
Stop. I say this right every time. You try and pick
just
up.
Just say Blades in it.
Blades in it.
There we go.
Not doing that. Mahershala Ali.
Mahershala.
Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
Jesus. Anyway, right.
No, he's not Jesus. He's Mahershala Ali.
Oh, hello. Oh.
Just throw the camera at me.
Oh, I've kicked it off. It's because the wire's hanging down.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
Shall we carry on?
Yeah, just carry on.
Right.
It's not the first time a camera's been thrown at me, let's be honest. Hello, Carl Deering.
This is Leave the World Behind. You can catch this on Netflix. It is about a family who rents a Airbnb. Is that what they're called? Where you could just...
Yeah.
Rent a house for a weekend or whatever.
I'm interested.
I've never done it, so I don't really know.
But, I'm interested to see where this goes, because I've heard mixed things. I want to know where you're at with it.
So, yeah, so they wake up one morning. It's Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke. They wake up one morning. The pressures of work, of everything else is too much. We need to get away. We need to de-stress. So they go and rent this absolutely amazing mansion in the middle of, like, in the middle of the country, which obviously is literally, you know, if you've been to New York, you'll know that obviously New York, very much like London, actually, to be fair, is this just insular city that is just buzzing 24/7, and then you only have to leave it by a few miles and you're in the country.
Yeah.
And New York is much like that, and so is London, very much like that. So they go to this mansion in the middle of the country, and they start to relax and unwind and start to, you know, do all the things you do when you go away. A couple of strange things happen. I really don't want to give away any spoilers, but a couple of strange things happen, and you kind of go, yeah, that's a bit
odd.
Odd. Yeah, really great. Yeah, that's a bit odd. And anyway, one evening they're sitting there over a glass of wine, and there's a knock at the door, and it's Mahershala Ali and his daughter. He's all dressed up in a suit, penguin suit, and all that sort of thing. And he says, "Oh, this is my house. The city where we were, New York City, has had a blackout and we didn't know where to come. So we've come home. I apologise. I know it's going to be a bit of an inconvenience." So then, very much like, what was the M. Night Shyamalan?
Knock at the Cabin.
Very much like Knock at the Cabin.
That's literally what I was thinking while you were explaining it to me. This is basically Knock at the Cabin.
Who's telling the truth? What are their intentions? And everything else like that. Things start to go wrong. Like, for example, the sat-nav stopped working. The TV stops working. The internet stops working. All of the, you know, anything that uses technology, Wi-Fi, etc., all stops working.
Yeah.
Emergency broadcasts go.
Yeah.
So they're now kind of working on how serious is this situation?
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what you have to figure out. You have to figure out, is it a serious situation? Is this person telling the truth? Is that person telling the truth?
Someone said the other day that it was ironic that Netflix have essentially just released a 2-hour-long trailer for why you should keep physical media.
Well, so, yeah, I read something very...
on a streaming platform.
Very similar. Again, I don't want to give away any sort of details or anything else too much about it, but there is a lot of, as the movie progresses, there is a lot in there that more or less says, physical media is actually quite good. And not, you know, if everything goes wrong at the end of the day, then, you know, it's still there.
Yeah, physical things.
Right. Where shall I go with this now? It's so bad.
Oh, is it?
It's so bad.
Oh, wow. Like, did not see that going. You were so hyped about it that I thought this is going to go somewhere different.
I was hyped about it, wasn't I? I was really looking forward to it.
I did not see that going that way. Continue.
So bad. It made me wonder why Julia Roberts... There's a cameo from...
Don't ruin it.
No, I think it's in the trailer. There's a cameo from Kevin Bacon. And I'm 99% sure.
Oh, okay. No, I thought he was in it.
Yeah, well, there you go. So,
but he isn't in it.
Well, he is. He's got a prevalent part later on. But it makes you wonder why these great actors are in this movie. This was apparently a very successful novel. And I thought, and I looked at it, and I thought, why? And then it clicked. It's because it's executive produced by Michelle and Barack Obama.
Right.
Maybe they had some pulling power is all I'm saying, you know, friends of friends and all of that type of stuff. The director, by the way, is the director of Mr. Robot. I don't know if you've
seen
it.
See, I really like Mr. Robot.
I haven't seen all of it, I'll be completely honest with you. But from what I've read, a lot of the early stuff made a lot of sense, and then the further on it went, a lot of the stuff didn't make sense. And that's exactly what I will say with this movie. Is, again, I'm going to try and say as much as I can without giving away any spoilers, and just in case my 1 out of 5 rating makes you curious and what you want to see.
Oh, wow.
This. Yeah, this is how bad this film is, right? There are just so many things that make no sense, that are unanswered. You know, there's this thing with the deer. So like I say, they're out in the middle of the country, so it would not be a surprise, right, to see an occasional deer wandering through your garden or whatever else. But we're talking hundreds of deers. Hundreds.
Deer.
Hundreds of deer.
Herds of them.
All gathering around their garden, staring at them.
Okay.
With no explanation.
Oh, so that's never explained.
No explanation.
That's
whatsoever.
In the trailer, but I don't...
There is almost like an alarm, like a piercing noise that goes off. And it happens 2 or 3 times throughout the movie, and they all cover their ears and everything else like that. Nothing. Nothing.
Is this whole thing a metaphor, though, for, like, economic crisis?
So basically what it's for is it's about
there's a climate.
There
or
is there an attack, same as Knock at the Cabin?
Yeah.
Is there an attack on America, or are they all being paranoid?
Right.
Is this actually really happening? Because they're not in the city where everything is happening. Yeah. They're slightly outside. Is it really going on? Is it their imagination? At one point, Ethan Hawke goes off to drive for help because, like I say, they are in the middle of nowhere. And there's a plane throwing leaflets, and it's all in Arabic. And he brings it home to his son. He says, oh, I've been playing whatever video game he's been playing. I know what that says. It says Death to America in Arabic. And then later on, somebody else says, oh, my friend two towns over has got the same leaflet, but it's in Korean or Mandarin.
Right,
or
like, okay. So this is like an allegory for, like, okay.
So it's very much, you know, America under attack, or is it?
Is it trying to be too clever for its own good?
I can't explain how there are so many.
There's like a message
setups
in there somewhere.
There
but
are
we just
so many setups,
yeah,
and not one of them gets finished.
So we don't. It probably started out with good intentions, but we don't really get to the guts of what the message is.
I just don't know.
Because I kind of see where this is going. I think this is, like, I haven't seen it, but I can kind of, from picking up your cues, I kind of feel like maybe this is about, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, this is the metaphor, the moral here is obviously either economic or,
I think it is. I think it's very much, because these are all very rich people.
Yeah,
I think
or climate related, environmental, sorry.
I think it's very much a, When you are in this position, your money will not help you, it will not save you. They go through lots of conspiracy theories about what it could be and who it could be and why it could be, and they go through all of this stuff.
Right.
And basically, it boils down to, like, nothing will help them. And you get to the end and you just go, what did I just watch?
Wow. So we're there.
I thought that the actors' performances were trying to overcompensate that as well.
Is it a bit like the Don't Look Up thing?
Which I hated, by the way. I thought that was awful, and I thought
it's very similar vein.
Don't Look Up, very much.
Yeah,
so,
okay, yeah. There we go. All right, yeah, I'm with you now.
And yeah, I've seen a few other reviews. One similar review said the only good thing about it was Julia Roberts. I would kind of agree. I thought that actually she was overacting. I thought she was overacting and made, and I know that she is not her character, but all of the characters in there make strange choices. And I watched, my wife sat and watched 20 to 30 minutes with me, and she couldn't handle it. And she walked away and she was like, I'm not watching this. And I was like, all of the choices you would make, if there are strange things going on in your house around the world,
in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Are you going to call?
What choice would you make if there was all of these strange things? For example,
I'd call the Ghostbusters.
Would you drink in the evening? Would you get high? Or would you want to stay alert?
That's the paradox, isn't it? Because in movies and series forevermore, when they're in a post-apocalyptic situation and they have a short break overnight, there's always a campfire and usually some psychedelics being passed around, because it's like a tension breaker.
If there was people in my house that I wasn't 100% trustworthy of, I'm not sure I'd let my guard down if my children were around me.
Yeah.
I think I would want them in bed with me, protecting them at all sorts.
Yeah,
all
I
times.
Don't know. I haven't seen it, but I mean, was there anything you liked about it? I think that's probably where we should go, because obviously everything is balanced in terms of critical analysis.
So I didn't give it 0 out of 5. Obviously, I gave it a 1 because, you know, it's clearly not a cheap movie.
Mm.
You know, for what effects there are good, it's all shot well and all that kind of thing. It's not, don't get me wrong. That's another thing I wanted to bring up. I thought the cinematography was awful. I thought it used every single cliche shot, every single, you know, there's a lot of shots with drones right now where it's flying through a window and all of that type of stuff. It used every single cliche shot that, oh, this will look cool. This will look cool. And you just go, why? Why have you done that? There's no need for you to shoot in through the window and then up through the roof.
No.
And out through...
I mean, Fast and Furious or
that,
you know,
type
Michael
of a
Bay.
Film,
Michael Bay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That type of a film really benefits from those type of
shots.
Yeah,
like a comic
this
book
one
movie
did not.
Or... A,
this
yeah.
one did not. Like I say, there are a handful of moments in there that are good cinema. they are so few and far between. So, no, wow. Unfortunately, I did not like this film one little bit. I would not recommend this movie, and I would give it a 1 out of 5.
You came home from a curry for that.
I did, and that, oh, I can't tell you how disappointed. Yeah, I went out for a meal with friends that I hadn't seen, like a school reunion type thing that I hadn't seen for a long time. And when we finished the meal and they all went into the pub at 8:30 or whenever it was afterwards, so I said, right, got to go, lads. See you later. Good to see
screening.
You all. Yeah. I've got to go and watch this movie.
Mm.
Really happy with that.
So if you'd have left that for Wonka, you would have been all right, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly that, yes. So unfortunately, no.
No
so,
chocolate in your pocket for that
no
one,
No chocolate
matey.
In the pocket for Leave the World Behind. It gets an unfortunate 1 out of 5.
Splendiferously bad.
Yeah, unfortunately so.
Okay. Well, there we go. Well, let's put that on a downer, isn't it?
Mm, right. Are we going to talk about digital...
Cheese graters!
Poor people!
Oh, do we need to... No, we're not changing it to poor people. The poor people gag is really funny, but if we change poor people to that, it's going to look like we...
Yeah, went with it. Cheese grater came before poor people.
No, but it looks like we are repulsed by poor people, and we are poor people. So
I'm not repulsed by cheese graters, just repulsed by that one scene in Evil Dead.
What, the one with the cheese grater? Yeah, there we go.
I shouldn't be doing that.
Bring it back. Oh, my
God. I
should
be doing that at the moment.
I've killed
a sore throat, yeah.
I've killed him. Are you going to do like a Poltergeist 2, just cough up a skeleton, like, God is in his holy temple. You're going to do that if I get you to do cheese grater and then you do that. Look at that. Dave Joyce has just arrived. He's brought coffee.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, Dave Joyce. Thank you very much. This was a very pleasant surprise. You're now on the podcast, by the way.
Say hello to all the ladies and gentlemen, Dave.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
There, Dave Joyce, the legend.
Both of you.
DJ in the building. Love it. Thank you very much, Dave. That's very kind. See, we got bought coffee by Dave.
Lovely.
That lovely thing.
Shall we carry on with the podcast?
Yes, let's carry on with the podcast.
Right, are we going to talk about...
It's very. How often on a podcast do we get personally served coffee
by a
legend in the scene, by the way?
100%.
Like, it's one thing to be bought coffee. It's another thing to be bought coffee by a legend in the scene. Look at that. What service? Thank you very much, Dave Joyce.
By the way, when John says a legend in the scene, he means the Portsmouth club and evening and night scene, not like anything untoward.
No, yeah. That wasn't. It was very positive.
It is very positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, do you want to talk about...
This
has been such a strange episode.
Why is it a strange episode? No stranger than normal.
Do you want to talk about 4K Blu-rays and DVDs?
I tell you why. It's because it's not so tightly structured, because normally there's lots and lots and lots coming out all at once, and we have to sort of go bosh, 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 bosh. I think this one has been more openly conversational, because there is a lot going on, but there isn't. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we're kind of, you know, working our way through. Okay, well, what can we talk about this week? Because there is a lot going on. We're kind of reflecting on stuff. There's stuff coming up. We will do a Christmas top five, I think. Should we do that next week?
Well, yeah. Do you know what? I was going to talk to you about this off air, but seeing as we're doing it now, we'll do it now.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about a Christmas top five for the Tip Top 5. I think we'll do that next week. I think it's a great time to do
that. Yeah, and then I think the one
we also need to do our top Tip Top, not Tip Top 10. We need to do our top 10 movies of the year. Do we want to do that next week, or do we want to do a special?
I was thinking...
Because there's going to be a lot of movies, because next week is going to be our last one, isn't it?
I kind of feel like we're having a pitch meeting on air.
We are, a pitch meeting on air.
Yeah.
Next week is going to be our last one, isn't it? We're going to have a little break for Christmas.
I think so, yeah. I mean, Scoreheads is going to carry on, I think.
Yes.
Only because, like, we've recorded a whole series worth. But, we are, I think, having a break for Christmas. No, I think Tip Top 5 Christmas should be the next one.
Yep.
Just so you know, so if you're listening right now, get your pens and paper at the ready. We're giving you advance notice this time. Tip Top 5 Christmas will be the next one, and the one after that will be Tip Top 5 Films of the Year.
Okay, so the first one back in January.
First one back in January will be your Tip Top 5 Films of 2023, because it will be 2024 when we come back. You'll have had the whole year. Unlike others, which we won't talk about, who released their Films of the Year 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So, you'll have actually had 12 months, the entire year, to, you know, and we'll be in a new year, so we'll be able to look back and reflect on that, because all of the films will have been out at that point. Because, you know, a couple like to sneak in right on the end there.
Well, yeah, exactly. I know for a fact that there's a few movies that I haven't seen that I need to get round to watching. So Christmas is a perfect opportunity to be able to shut yourself in a darkened room for a few hours and do that.
Sit down, Sean. Don't get excited. I'm not doing Tip Top 5 scores of the year. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
he might. Actually, you know what, I might get Sean Wilson.
Might, yeah.
Sean Wilson. I might get Sean Wilson to do it because he's an absolute champion and I think it will be a really brilliant, well-researched, well-informed top five. Whereas I've got far too many composer friends to be behaving in that sort of nonsense. Like, well, why wasn't I number one?
I was just thinking, like, remember on MySpace when you had your top 8 friends?
No, I'm not doing it. Yeah, it's exactly like that. No, most of them are really, really brilliant, brilliant folks and they wouldn't pay it any mind or notice. There is the odd one or two, maybe, that I'll be like, all right, got your number for next year. So there are a few others that they just won't speak to me for 3 months. No, I'm joking. They're all really, really brilliant people. And actually, I just don't like, because there were so many really great soundtracks in the last year. Really great ones. And as well as films. But weirdly, with films, it's slightly easier to weigh that up.
Yeah,
and also,
I'm
contractually obliged to give a top 10 of the year for Express FM anyway.
Yeah.
But scores, I generally don't do it because I enjoyed so many great scores this year that it's difficult to choose a number one, because at the moment I've kind of got like 3 favourites and they're all tied first place at the moment. So anyway, we'll move on.
Should we get back to the podcast?
Oh yeah, we're making a podcast,
yeah,
aren't
we? About that.
This is
yeah.
really random. I told you the mushrooms are good, didn't I?
will that be cut or will it be left in?
No,
who knows?
Leave it in.
Right, okay. Right, do you want to talk about DVDs or should we move straight on to the Tip Top 5?
We can't just, to be honest with you, I think really at the moment it's all about stocking fillers, isn't it? And just kind of reflecting on, funnily enough, talking about films of the year, reflecting on things that are around at the moment, really. A lot of stuff we've already talked about, stuff I'd highly recommend at the moment. Of course, those Barbie's Collector's Editions are out now.
Yeah.
It was nice to revisit that recently. I really like Blue Beetle.
Blue Beetle's great. That's, I was just thinking about Turtles.
Turtles as well. Mutant Mayhem, that's another good one. Stocking filler-wise, Super Mario Brothers movie, of course.
I'll tell you the one that you were talking a lot about last week that I haven't seen it and I do need to see it is Past Lives. You've been talking a lot about
Past Lives
that.
Is incredible.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. See, again, so that's one of my 2 watch films over the Christmas period.
Spoiler alert, it is in my top 5. But yeah, Past Lives is just fresh to DVD. Elf's had a, I keep saying 40th, it's not, it's 20th anniversary 20th, release. Yeah. That's had a cinema release. And then, of course, there's a 4K Blu-ray. And yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff. It's that time of year. Collector's sets,
yeah,
Christmas sets.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. Mission Impossible still not out of my Blu-ray player yet. So yeah, that's another one that's on there. But yes, there's plenty out at the moment that you can check out and enjoy. Right, Tip Top 5.
It is time for the Tip Top 5.
We're going to need a bigger pod. Tip Top 5.
Right, Mr. John Brown, seeing as you have got nothing prepared.
Ha!
It's over to you, sir.
Well, we know how this works. I don't do top fives because I'll end up doing top 5 by kind of critical analysis and, you know, what I think are the top 5 best disaster movies, not necessarily my top 5 favourite disaster movies. So what we do is I then just come at it with my 5 that pop straight into my head, because if they're in my head, that means they've resonated long enough and
absolutely,
well enough.
Absolutely.
So now, disaster films, disaster films in general are pretty decent at the time, but then when you look back, they're actually quite laughable, some of them. But the ones I really enjoy that are true, I would say true popcorn entertainment in certain respect, well, the ones that are fictional anyway. Obviously, there's that other one, which I'm definitely going to mention, which was based on a real event. So we should probably, you know, that's not laughable. But I would say the first 5 that pop in my head, that whenever I think of disaster movies that I really, really enjoyed, I think that I'm going to say Dante's Peak, because Dante's Peak and Volcano came out at the same time. I'm not including it in the list before you say that, but I'm saying they, you know, when we go through those periods of films where, and actually disaster movies have had this a lot with Deep Impact and Armageddon and so on and so forth. So I would say Dante's Peak was the one of those two that stood out for me, because I really like it. Pierce Brosnan's great.
Made
in that
my
as
short
well.
List. Made my
yeah,
short
for
list.
Sure.
Yep.
Dante's Peak's in there. Really, really like that. Twist is in there. I revisit that more often than
Twister,
not.
Twister, yeah, great film. Great film.
And we're getting a sequel, which is great.
You're yes.
Also, I would say Independence Day.
Yeah.
Because that's box office brilliance.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's box office brilliance. That's definitely in there. And what's the other one? There's another one I want to include. Where have I gone so far? Dante's Peak, Independence Day.
Twister.
Twister. Disaster movies. Come at me. I'm going to throw The Day After Tomorrow in there.
Good shout. Made my shortlist.
But the number one, I actually have got a number one, is Titanic. Because it's one of the greatest films ever made, right? So, yeah, Titanic's my...
That's your top five. Good top five. Very good top five. Especially seeing as it's literally off the top of the
dome. That was off the top of my dome, yes.
Right, so here are mine in no particular order. Okay, so my top five disaster movies are Deepwater Horizon, which I thought was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Twister.
Yeah, without any shadow.
The Perfect Storm.
Yeah, do you know what? It's a really sad movie, that
one. It's really sad. Makes me cry my eyes out every time. And I would dare say The Perfect Storm is probably my number one out of those. Gravity.
Oh, good choice.
And finally, I don't think a lot of people think about this one, but I love it. Unstoppable.
Yeah.
Unstoppable is... Yeah, so solid. Good. I mean, Tony Scott,
yeah.
Denzel Washington, Chris Pine.
Captain Kirk.
I remember seeing it at the time and thinking it was a great film. And then a few years ago, Tarantino did an interview with somebody somewhere and they asked him some of his favourite films and he mentioned Unstoppable and I went back and revisited it. I was like, this is a great... I mean,
do you know what? I'm going to do that tonight
all
now.
Tony Scott
it.
Films are great for suspense, right? The way he shoots it and everything else like that. It's a fantastic film. It really is a fantastic
thing is, I
film.
I saw Beverly Hills Cop... Well, I kind of saw Beverly Hills Cop 2 again yesterday. Also Tony Scott, because I was kind of like doing 10 other things at the same time. But I've just realised you make me go back and watch Unstoppable now.
Yeah.
So I think I might have a week of Tony Scott.
It's very...
Do you know what?
That would be time well spent.
Yeah, True Romance... There's so much good stuff. Deja Vu's pretty decent. I like Deja Vu.
Yeah,
no, that's a good list. Top Gun, obviously. Yeah. That would give me an excuse. Top Gun Maverick, of course.
As if you need an excuse to go and watch that. Right, it's time for our listeners' Tip Top Fives. The We're Gonna Need a Bigger Pod Listener's Choices. Right, so listeners' Tip Top Fives. Unless you know any, I've got three here.
No, I don't think I'm aware of any other. You've been on this.
Yeah, nothing in your inbox, no? Okay.
No.
Right.
Ooh, sausage.
Right, okay, so...
It's thrown you, hasn't it?
It really did, yep.
Hello, sweetheart!
So, Wayne Johnson, we'll start with yours. Wayne Johnson, I don't know if these are... If they're numbered, I assume they're in an order. So let's go from 5 to 1. So number 5 is Deepwater Horizon.
Oh, again, yeah, good shout.
Number 4 is Independence Day. Number 3 is The Perfect Storm. Number 2 is Titanic, and number 1 is Armageddon.
Oh, yeah, Armageddon. That was the other one I was trying to think of. But Armageddon and Day After... I think Day After Tomorrow is the message.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like it's got some really powerful performances. Armageddon's amazing, actually. Do you know what, Wayne? Good shout, mate. I wish I'd put Armageddon in there. What makes that worse is I only watched it the other week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But if it's not in my memory, does that mean it didn't resonate?
But just remember, why did they send drillers up to space and not astronauts to teach them to drill?
No, they were trying to teach astronauts how to drill, weren't they?
Yeah, no, they taught drillers how to go up into space rather than teaching astronauts how to drill. And why? Because it says so in the script.
Oh, man.
That's what he told Ben Affleck.
Honestly, if you can find yourself, because I don't know if it's on all the Blu-ray versions, but if you can find yourself a DVD copy of Armageddon with the commentaries, honestly, Ben Affleck's commentary, on some days I kind of feel like it's almost more entertaining than the movie.
So you know that famous picture of Ben Affleck stood outside somewhere having a smoke, literally going...
Oh, sad Ben. Sad Affleck. Yeah.
That was how that entire commentary is.
Yeah, but I don't know. He was pretty zippy about it. Like, I kind of feel like he'd be really... Honestly, I would love to... I don't have the money, but I would love to do a whole series with Ben Affleck where it's just us and Ben Affleck sitting there watching some of the worst movies ever made. Not just his movies. Not his movies necessarily, but some of the worst movies ever. I mean, his movies would be better, right? Because he'd be able to offer inside... commentary, but just sit down with Ben Affleck and watch some of what are regarded as the worst films ever and just get Ben Affleck's feedback and just let him loose.
Just go.
Yeah.
Right, Ally McNiff, starting from number 5, going to 1. Number 5, Deepwater Horizon. Number 4, Aeroplane, which is that 1970 or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Number 3, Armageddon. Number 2, The Day After Tomorrow. And number 1, The Impossible.
Oh, do you know what? Good shout. You've just reminded me. The Towering Inferno.
Towering Inferno. Yeah.
Oh, what a film.
And finally, Julia Minty. Poseidon Adventure, 1972.
Oh, again, that's this. Did you a minute ago? Did you hear me go? Yeah. The Towering Inferno. Yourself, yeah.
number four, Titanic. Sorry. Number three, Independence Day from 1996, the original. Number two, The Day After Tomorrow, and this made my shortlist. 2012. It's not a good film, but it's. It is one of those.
I mean, The Day After Tomorrow is a bit risky. They're all a bit risky. To be honest, I've got a soft spot for Volcano, even though it's.
But I think, isn't that the thing with not all, but most disaster films are a little bit
cheese on toast?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I love 2012. That made my shortlist. I love it. It's just so bad. Yeah, it's brilliant.
2012, I mean, Volcano, to be fair, I mean, like Dante's Peak, I think, is pretty tight. I haven't seen it in a while. But I think that's still pretty tight. No.
The one scene that you've forgotten from Dante's Peak, which makes me laugh every year, is when, they drive on lava.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right.
Which is great. And when the old lady literally is walking in a river of acid, pushing the boat along. It's not happening. It's just not happening.
I think they were just trying to like. Oh no! And it's really sad. It was really sad. Well, it's supposed. Well, I mean, it's supposed to be really sad. But I kind of feel like they borrowed that from Neverending Story with the horse and the walk,
right?
In the mud or whatever.
The other one I was going to say is in Volcano when he stands in the volcano. In the lava in the subway, and just slowly melts down into it, which is again completely not what would happen at all. Do you not remember?
Yeah, no.
He jumps out of the subway. He jumps out of the actual train tube.
Into the
lava. He's holding a child or a dog or something. I can't even remember.
Oh, and the dog gets saved.
And he throws to safety.
Yeah, but that's.
And then he slowly melts down into the lava, which again is completely not what would happen.
And Daylight with Stallone, where they're all trapped in the tunnel, is another one.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, that's cheese on toast.
Is it bad?
Yeah, but you've just reminded me that disaster movie lore dictates that the dog always lives.
Oh, of course, yeah. Usually with a very bad CGI of them jumping over.
But the dog always lives. Like Daylight, yeah. Daylight affects that rule.
Dante's
Volcano,
Peak.
Dante's Peak. Independence Day's got one of those shots, hasn't it?
Yes. That's bad CGI.
The law of disaster movies dictates that it's not a disaster movie
unless a dog dies. Yeah.
No, unless a dog lives. Like, the dog must live.
Oh, right, yeah, but you know it's bad when a dog dies, because that's the ultimate in sad when a dog dies.
No, but it doesn't.
You can
that's
have
what
hundreds
I mean.
Of hundreds of people get burnt to a crisp.
Yeah, but
and
Twister.
It makes no difference whatsoever. And when the dog dies, it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, but
God.
Twister, the old lady, she's stuck at the bottom of the house because obviously it tears through the town. Yeah. But the dog's the one that finds her, right?
Yeah.
That you can hear the dog barking.
Yeah.
And that's how they find her, right? That's what I'm saying. The dog always lives. Like, I'm trying to think. Literally throw any disaster movie at me and I'll tell you the dog lives and I'll remember how. Like, the dog always lives. It's like the cornerstone lore of disaster films.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, I'm good with that, by the way, because let's face it, the dog's always got to live.
Most times dogs are better than people anyway.
Yeah.
Right. That is us done. It was an absolutely mad episode. Thank you. Thank you very much for sticking with us if you've got all the way to the end.
Very different episode, I think.
Very different.
Because
episode.
It wasn't so rat-a-tat-tat-tat, let's go through all this information. It was more kind of like, let's just have an open conversation and see what happens.
Thank you very much for listening. We do greatly, greatly appreciate it. As always, if you have enjoyed it, or let's face it, if you thought this one was just completely weird, feel free to tell us.
Why do you keep calling it weird?
Because we've just gone off on so many different tangents. It was so strange.
I exist on tangents.
Thank you for listening. Tell us what you thought. Feedback and comment in all the usual different places.
Pass those mushrooms over.
We will be back next week. And like we've said, next week we will be doing a Tip Top 5 Christmas films. That's going to be really tough.
Yeah, disclaimer, there were no actual mushrooms involved in the making of this episode. Yeah, no, because I can see this getting like clipped by Screen Rant or somebody going, podcasters do podcast on mushrooms. It never happened. It literally never happened. I've made that up for randomness. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to the View Cinema in Gunwolf Keys, of course. We haven't seen you in a little while, but we're coming back soon, I promise. We're literally going to occupy the building because you've got so much good stuff coming out over December. Myview.com to find your nearest view. for times and tickets. Thank you to the Express FM studios and everyone in it. Miles, Ian, Harrison, Darren and Dave Joyce for the coffee that was delivered.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, sir. And we shall be back next week with your tip top five Christmas movies. Start thinking about them now. I bet you've watched them already in the last week, haven't you? Yes, you have.